The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY with no spaces. And you'll save an additional 20% on these already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com. And remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout to save big. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another Monday morning tech chat show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, aka Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this horribly named podcast series, but the QA is the important part because that stands obviously for question and answer as we make this an interactive conversation, a way to start off a new week of cool tech news, look back at the week before us, see what kind of tech happenings we want to chat about. And then this is also a good opportunity for us to follow up on tech stories, not just let them kind of fall by the wayside, you know, sort out our feels on the top tech stories out there. Folks, we have been back and forth, and the weather has been crazy. We went from super high winds. We're actually getting some rain in Southern California. So another apology for those of you who are a bit sensitive to that kind of hearing stuff. My voice is not in great shape. So I will be consuming a copious amount of water and probably clearing my throat multiple times throughout this broadcast. But I'm already seeing, let's try that again. We're already seeing a phenomenal live chat showing up here. Aditya Anil, Awesome Possum, Hickey, Dave Burns, ER1980, Simon Says Hypno, Heike, Alsbachli, Muppinish, Vazikos, Pacostin. I'm Matt Tyler. Matt Tyler dropping by. Everyone say hey to Maddie. TK Bay. We've got a wild TK Bay in the house. And Awesome Possum's already telling me to hydrate. We'll do it again. Okay. I had a lovely weekend. We tried to do another sort of blackout movie night for Lex, and kind of going through a couple different options. If you caught the TK stream on Thursday, we were kind of talking about some of the things I've been doing with my daughter and how we're putting together our very first Lego kit. I got a Hulkbuster Lego armor for Christmas, and it's taken a really long time. It's actually mostly built, but on the shelf, like right by my head back there. Still need to finish one hand. We'll see if we can beat the deadline. We still need to finish a shoulder. We'll see if we can beat the deadline before my next stream with TK. But in sort of showing her all of these different like Hulkbusters and armors and fun toy kits and stuff like that, she had a lot of questions about like the Marvel Cinema Universe. So she was playing with little minifigs of Ultron and Black Widow and Proxima and like a whole bunch of other, you know, little toys and stuff. And so we started showing her a few more of the Marvel movies. And I think at 5, we can start slowly kind of building through some of the more fun ones. Like, we want to get her through Guardians. I think the first Captain America is probably okay. The first Iron Man still has a few adult situations, and I'm not sure I'm ready for those kinds of conversations yet, like the reporter from Vanity Fair. But she also was super into Captain Marvel. So, again, just a nice little collection of movies and fun things to kind of build through. I hope everyone out there had a lovely weekend. We were definitely kind of shut in. So, you know, we kicked off all the lights and popped up a whole bunch of popcorn. By the way, Orville Redenbacher corn popping oil, not that great. I mean, like, I was like, oh, I really want something that's kind of movie theater buttery. Not the gig. I mean, like, it was fine, but it doesn't drizzle like movie theater popcorn butter, and it doesn't pop into the popcorn with a buttery flavor. So we've been backing off. What is it that we used to use? Coconut oil? Yeah, that really thick stuff that kind of you have to kind of melt it. It's almost like a lard. That still, I mean, makes the most flavorful popcorn, but like, it is apparently proper bad for you and just gums up your heart and is awful. So I need to find something else that we can kind of give popcorn a fun flavor and like something in there that's a bit more like a movie theater. Paco Stin, a question for later, some gadget guy, why a racing chair? I thought I'd give a gaming chair a try. You can add me to the list of people who would probably not recommend owning a gaming chair, especially if you're editing for long periods of time. My wife and I were actually shopping office chairs for both of us. So we're going to be looking at swapping out. She's got just like a little like rolly desk chair, rolly student chair. And it's not great. I don't like this floppy Velcro pillow arrangement just to kind of, it doesn't do it for me. Dank Pikmin, don't at me with the Marvel movie, show her Jurassic Park. So Jurassic Park is still one of my all-time favorite movies. I saw it 13 times in theaters. I watch it probably every couple of months, but it's a monster movie and it's actually still pretty intense. Like, it holds up so well, and she is super into dinosaurs. I'm not quite ready for her to see T-Rex eating people by the scores. I mean, she's only 5. But yeah, it was, my grandfather who's passed. One summer I went out to visit him, and it was opening weekend for Jurassic Park. And he wasn't really super into contemporary movies. He liked like old Westerns, or, you know, he really liked them. He was a product of his time. Like, oh, like Death Wish. Like, oh, these thugs are taking over this town and it's up to one man with a big gun to set everything right. And he was kind of into that kind of stuff. So I was kind of surprised. He was like, hey, mijo, let's go see Jurassic Park. And I'm like, yeah, dinosaurs. I'm there. Let's do it. That man was on the edge of his seat. You know how we say that? You know, it's like that phrase. It's in a movie theater trailer. You'll be on the edge of your seat. He was legit, like, on his tiptoes, knees up, sitting on the very edge. And once all of the sort of, you get into the last third of the film and stuff is going haywire and the dinosaurs are infiltrating the park, he was just like clench, iron grip on my forearm. So the scene happens where they're kind of crawling through the ceiling panels and a velociraptor jumps up through a ceiling panel, falls down, and the daughter falls through the ceiling panel kind of along with the velociraptor. He not only fell off of the edge of his seat, he pulled me out of my seat and we both tumbled onto the floor and I dropped like the little kernels that were left in my popcorn bag, and we're just laughing hilariously as he freaked out. And even just like, not only was the movie one of the most amazing movies of all time and still holds up today, and it's still way better than any of the sequels and these new reboots, these soft reboots of Jurassic Worlds. I'll always adore Jurassic Park for giving me that moment with my grandfather. And ER1980 question, does bad popcorn ruin the movie experience? Anyone in the comments, I'd say check it out. And Simon says, Hypno, show Lex the Batman movie with Adam West. Okay, Lex's favorite flavor of Batman is the Adam West Batman TV show. We have tried both the animated series, the original Batman, the animated series, and the Adam West Batman, and she is on board. Like, she even has critiques like, the Riddler's really funny, but his laugh is too much like the Joker's laugh, as we're talking about Frank Gorshin and Cesar Romero. So she is on board classic Adam West Batman. The more I watch that old school Batman, I would kill for a Grand Theft Auto style open world Batman game in the vein of the 1960s Batman. Just like, you get into big thug fights, and every time you punch someone, there's like a biff and a splat, and you've got that classic, you know, nuclear powered Batmobile. I want that so bad. I would play that so hard. But yeah, I want to give it a little bit more time, and then we're going to try the Batman animated series and Justice League, the animated Justice Leagues again. The thing is, it's more mature storytelling. The cartoons are more mature storytelling than the classic Adam West Batman. So because they're not as bright and hyper goofy, she actually doesn't have as much patience for the Batman animated series, which is hilarious. All right. Dave Burns, it's the best Batman if you love silly. I really like having different flavors and versions of Batman. I really don't like how, you know, main canon, especially for films, is sort of targeted at dudes my age. It's why I really don't like the Zack Snyder Superman interpretation. It's because it's very off-putting, it's very authoritarian, it's not a symbol of hope, it's not very bright. He's an emo, just pained, tortured individual. And it's okay to wrestle with a few of those concepts, but I feel like we've completely missed the point of Superman, because the Batman movies were successful and they were dark edgelord, gritty, real edge, dark, real grit. And I feel like we take these characters that have been around for generations, and now we're in kind of a death spiral of just reselling the same character, but darker and edgier and darker and edgier to like increasingly older consumers. And it doesn't really bring new people in. Like, I can't bring my daughter in on the Snyderverse. I can barely show her scenes from Wonder Woman films. And the Wonder Woman films have some issues. So, you know, it'll be a little while. Some of the camp and fun of the Michael Keaton Batman, she's probably not too far off, although I think some of the Joker stuff is kind of ghastly. But yeah, I want her to have a flavor of Batman that makes sense for her time, for her generation, for her as a kid. I don't need to sell her a flavor of Batman that makes Daddy feel cool because Batman is dark and edgy and he has machine guns and he kills thugs because that's realistic. I don't know. It's really not my gig. From Hickey 85, that game would be amazing visually. Pow, biff, splat. Clearly the best superhero is Fish Boy. Matt Tyler, George Clooney Batman is the best, fight me. Actually, I kind of liked George Clooney as Bruce Wayne. I'm not the biggest fan of the Schumacher. I kind of like Batman Forever. Again, getting back to campy and bright and fun and silly, it's actually not terrible. But when you get to Batman and Robin, it's... it's they're almost becoming a parody of a bad Batman film, and I just can't get into that. And it's kind of a bummer. So, Squishy, Cesar Romero Joker, great Joker for kids. In fact, the Batman animated series, the Mark Hamill Joker, is kind of intense. I think it'd be a little off-putting. It's just so funny. You know, like, we go through these different, like, phases. I want to come back to a slightly lighter phase for DC, especially for how great DC animation has been. Some of those iconic. Kevin Conroy as Batman is kind of the Batman that makes the most sense in my brain. Mark Hamill's Joker is phenomenal. I can't remember. Michael Rosenbaum as Wally West is a great Flash. Clancy Brown as Lex Luthor. Oh, man. Best Lex Luthor is animated Lex Luthor by, like, I mean, it's like you can't even define the scale of how much better Clancy Brown is as Lex Luthor. Just, it's the only time Lex Luthor has been a villain that I really felt could go toe to toe with Superman. All right. We should probably knock out some housekeeping, but that was my weekend. I hope you all had a lovely weekend. I hope you all got to spend some fun time doing stuff with people you care about, eating some fun snacks or eating some good food. And we've got a lot of news to get through, and I also want to make sure my voice holds out. Maybe for next week's show, we'll make it just another pajama party where we just ramble on about the media, the TV. We can catch up on a lot of TV, maybe some games that we're playing, something like that. All right. Excuse me. Like I said, apologies up front. This is going to be a biologically active podcast. That was the worst way I could put that. I got to get another mug of water back here. We're going to switch over to Mega Pickles. I need more water. Put that right there on my desk, where when I knock it over, it'll dump directly into my computer case. All right. Aditya, why do I want to see Juan wearing a Batman costume now? I mean, I think as far as I'll get is my Batman hoodie, and we'll go from there. All right, this was a very busy week, but I'm under embargo for stuff, so I was shooting like crazy, and hopefully some of that stuff will be coming out this week, but I did manage to get a few things out, and I'm very happy with the things that we did get out. All of the stories and all of the articles that we're going to be talking about are going to be in the show notes on this week's show, somegadgetguy.com, my main website, where you can find all the stuff that I'm working on. Let me go into screen share real quick. Oh, I did not set my screen. No, that's actually pretty good. All right, first story up, the Earfun Free Pro True Wireless. So much bang for so little buck. Some true wireless earbuds, $60. So not only under $100, but well under $100. And some of the most techie earbuds I've ever seen in this price segment. Did a full review. And I got to throw the shout out to my buddy Jeff, LFA Reviews, for putting them on my radar. Again, if you're not following El Jefe and you claim you care about your ears, then you don't really care about your ears unless you're following Jeff. He's basically single-handedly saved true wireless earbuds, in my opinion, as an actual consumer product idea. It was literally his videos that brought me back to checking out true wireless. Number two, fun thing that we've been working on consistently, TK and I, Best of Our Week, Episode 6, The End of LG Smartphones? Qua? So we're going to be talking about this in the second half of this podcast today, but TK and I are doing a weekly stream where we kind of check in on each other. We talk about the best things that happened to us that week, especially in the world of tech, and then we definitely had to talk about some of this stuff right here. So if you want sort of a longer form conversation on that topic. You can catch us chatting about there too. I want to send a shout out, a thank you to Matt Tyler for taking care of that spam. And yeah, our thumbnail game definitely needs work, TK. We still need to chat because I need to talk to TK about what we're going to do for the audio version of the podcast. And we need to come up with like at least one good thumbnail that can show off our show. Yeah, it's pretty silly. Where is the shock and awe in that thumbnail? We need to do more of the my brain explode thumbnails, which I absolutely hate. I hate so bad. Here's a promise I'm going to make you. I will never be the guy to do wacky face clickbaity thumbnails. It's not me. And Dank Pikmin, save that question for the second half of the podcast when we get into the gadget block, because we will be talking about that too. Third, and this is one that I want to talk about here for just a second. I put out a video on the day of Biden's inauguration, President Biden's inauguration. Tech is politics. We have a lot of work to do. Now, this is something I talk about a lot on the podcast. So if you're familiar with the podcast, you kind of know my positions on technology and technology politics. It's always the first sort of main block of news that we go through is what's going on with consumer protections or net neutrality or regulations. Biden's inauguration to me was the right time to reinforce the idea that changing the president doesn't change the humongous amount of work that we need to do to correct some of the issues facing the tech community. And techies still have this kind of idea that they're above politics. They're not going to get in that messy politics. So I put out a video, and of course, it's one of the most thumbs downed videos I've ever put out. It was full of just ridiculous comments like, this is a slap in the face to half of the people who subscribe to your channel, which is obviously not true. And then, of course, I'm just so tired of being bombarded by politics. And you're like, I put out a video. And it's 4 minutes. No, I was proud of myself because it's exactly 5 minutes and 28 seconds long. 5:28? Anyone? Come on. I was proud of me. It's a political video about the American political process as it pertains to technology. And I hit 5:28. But no, the video is a call to action for techies to lead these conversations. If we don't lead the conversations, we have no right complaining about some of the worst informed elected officials writing laws that will affect the future of the telecommunications space. But a bridge too far. Oh, my undies and are twisted and my pearls must be clutched. DTNL, 5 minutes and 28 seconds for Juan is him showing serious restraint. I mean, considering we're in for probably another 90 minutes of podcast, yeah, that's probably true. But the reason why I want to talk about this isn't necessarily what was in the video. We still need to manage conversations about platforms for speech, protected speech, free speech, and how to combat the spread of misinformation. It's two of the stories that we've got in the news block are going to be about that. So fair warning, I'm not going to weight the news block too heavy, but we're still talking about this. We're facing the disastrous and dire consequences of being able to spread toxic disinformation in a weaponized form to a community of people who are undereducated and very susceptible to playing into conspiracy theory kinds of thought. And of course, I had a number of conservatives very concerned, just very concerned, because what we're doing is we're silencing conservative speech. And this is what my free speech rights are being infringed upon. And for this podcast, and especially for those of you who might be in similar conversations like me, the one thing that does not seem to be getting through, it just doesn't seem to be landing. And we're fighting an empire of conservative media that is clouding and muddying the waters on this. Free speech protections cut both ways. Your First Amendment rights stop at government preventing you from speaking. you are free to a degree. Remember, First Amendment doesn't cover hate speech. It doesn't cover yelling fire in a crowded movie theater. But to a large degree, the government cannot throw you in prison for seditious speech, for lying, for wild conspiracy theories. That's it. That's what the First Amendment affords you. What conservatives too frequently forget is we have established case law to extend our First Amendment and those protections so that we are not compelled to speak. You can check it out. I mean, if you look up like the Compelled Speech Doctrine, it's a series of cases, some of which that went before the Supreme Court, that clearly lay out a framework that the government can't force you to say something you don't want to say. So it's not just the government is, you know, can't throw me in prison for saying something seditious. It's also the government can't compel me to publish or say something I don't want to say. So if we're in this situation where we have to acknowledge wild conspiracy theory speech and we can't use the government to force someone not to say that, then conservatives also need to understand there might be no free market platform willing to publish that wild conspiracy theory. It cuts both ways. You can't do that. You can't force a private platform to publish what you want them to publish unless you are for a government that can compel a private organization or a private individual to publish speech they disagree with. Your protections go both ways. So I, for one, don't want a government that can force people to say things they disagree with. But that's the reality of the free market. That's the reality of living in a society with freedoms and protections. And what's hilarious is that if we were classifying the internet as a public utility, there would probably be more opportunities for truly public platforms, not private companies acting as private platforms, but a true public meeting space, a true public town hall. But again, especially over the last 4 years, conservatives lobbied like crazy to gut the protections that would lead us to the internet being a public institution, a public platform. So it's really, if you don't have an alternative, if you don't have, you know, a place to spread your message outside of Twitter or Facebook, it's probably because you've been working against some ability to have a truly public platform that is free of the commerce and the market influences that Twitter and Facebook fall prey to. So it goes beyond, you know, like, you know, selling cakes to gay couples. It's a very complicated and nuanced and spiderwebby kind of situation. And in a knee-jerk moment, some communities and some politicians plucked a few strings, and they didn't consider the ramifications of those actions coming back to bite them. And this is why we need to be critical. And this is why we need to be examining our public policy moving forward. Because laws are broadswords when most of the time we need scalpels. And it's very delicate work. And, you know, people want to stomp and cry, oh, you're silencing conservatives. No. No, if you want to build your own public platform for that kind of speech, you can, but there is no guarantee an established media company will want to carry your message. That's the gig. That's where we're at. So, and I had to scrub out more than a few comments from people that were like advocating open and armed revolt. So that's always fun. I'm saying, hey, maybe it's a good time to bring back net neutrality. And people are screaming about, you know, like arming themselves and taking over. I did send one to the FBI, one comment. It was pretty out there. So when those of you are in these conversations, there's some empathy there. It sucks. But there is no free market position that says you have to support the publication of commentary like wild conspiracy theories. All right. How about we just knock out this news block? Because we're going to dovetail right into that. Oh, wait, no. There is one more bit of housekeeping. Sorry. This was just, I had a little window of time and it came out really good. And I'm really proud of how this came out. My audio deep dives, my camera deep dives are still Patreon exclusives. And I lost my mouse cursor. There we go. Inexpensive audio battle TCL 10 5G versus Nord N10. So instead of doing separate videos for each inexpensive phone, I put them up against each other. Now, I'm not really looking to do the audio deep dives as showdowns because I want it to be just a little bit more nuanced and scientific, showing off some of the charts and graphs and the measurements that I take and then talking about some of my experiences with good audio. The takeaway, I feel like the TCL, totally reasonable, inexpensive phone, kind of where you would expect the audio experience to be. The Nord N10 was very surprising, especially for being cheaper. That's all I'm going to say on that. The rest of it, patreon.com/somegadgetguy. If I were doing an alternate title, it would be something along the lines of lots of question marks and did OnePlus give us a budget audiophile option? Question mark, question mark, question mark. Because maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Who's to say? If these videos ever were more popular and ever got shared on YouTube, I'd be able to put them out publicly. But YouTube destroys my metrics when these kinds of videos go public. Whee! All right, now let's knock out. Let's knock out some news. And Paul Puri subscribed at Tier 1. Thank you so much for supporting production on the channel. Really appreciate it. I'm late. Conspiracy theorists will say I overslept. that's hilarious. All right, moving right along. A little shining example of some good news. I got to take another drink of water here. Hold on, I can feel it in the back of my chest. Awesome Possum, second channel content. I'm not going to build a whole second channel on the content that was already not popular and not shared from my main channel. If I have 100,000 subscribers and people aren't sharing my audio and camera deep dives, I'm not going to make a whole second channel just to do that. That's what the Patreon is for. And I've got to find a way to subsidize that work because it takes forever to make those kinds of videos and they don't pay on YouTube. Now, again, if my channel were to suddenly like blow up and people were sharing like crazy, we'd be able to come up with some kind of solution to make those videos happen or to make them subsidized. But that hasn't come to pass, especially over the last year. Okay, a little shining example of some good news when we start talking about regulators and something we techies should definitely keep on our radars. The FTC is fining three ticket scalping companies for illegally using bots. This is written up by Adi Robertson over at The Verge. The FTC issued multi-million dollar fines against three bot-powered ticket scalping applications, saying these organizations bought over 150,000 event tickets over the past 4 years, nabbing them with automated tools that evaded online purchasing limits. After reselling these tickets for an estimated $26.1 million, they've been accused of breaking a 2016 anti-bot law, the first time this law has been applied. That's what's critical here. This law has been around for a while, so no one ever felt like doing anything about it. So, concerts, okay, cool, scalpers. But we tech fans, what are some recent examples of things where real people have been trying to buy something, but then folks have been trying to buy up the supply of those things so they could sell them online at inflated costs and interrupt the actual consumer experience? I wonder if anyone, can anyone in the comments come up with some examples like what would be a techie version of ticket scalpers? It's a mystery. Oh, Squishy Man. You know what? That's a great comment. Like PS5s and Xboxes, or Awesome Possum saying GPUs like the RTX 3080.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r/glowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
I'm going to ask for some consumer advocacy from people watching and listening to this podcast. I'm writing a letter to the FTC. If the FTC is finally applying a law written in 2016 to combat bots buying up supply to resell at a higher price, why can't we turn our attention to things like consumer electronics? I'm going to ask that anyone watching this or listening to this write up the FTC. Send some examples. We've got plenty of articles talking about the challenges that retailers have faced in trying to combat this issue. Newegg, a really weird policy of setting up like a lottery system for the next time they have stock. I don't feel that really corrects for the problem at hand. It's like it's like a floppy, ill-fitting Band-Aid on a major gushing wound of consumer commerce. So instead of just sharing the same stories or complaining on social media, I would appreciate it if you could take that same time out of your day that you would have drafted a tweet or a Facebook post and send a message directly to the FTC. And this is what it means for us techies to get involved. It's the same amount of time that you would have spent complaining on Reddit, but instead going directly to the regulators that don't seem to notice the exact same situations happening in other arenas. And I think if we take that time out of our day, and instead of just shouting into the void of social media, sort of appropriately reached out to elected officials, senators, congressmen, state elected officials, and to regulatory agencies, I feel like we'd be in much better shape. And Matt Tyler, I will, but the FTC will just ignore the dude from the UK. Well, don't lead with, I'm in the UK. Yeah, that's pretty funny. And I know, I'm definitely saying there's an international community here, but let's say you're in the UK or you're in the EU. I wonder, or in Canada, Squishy Man, I wonder if you're facing similar situations, is there a regulatory body that's analogous to the United States' FTC in your neck of the woods? Anyway, moving right along. Speaking of bots, and this is what I was saying, we're dovetailing my political conversation into how do we combat the spread of misinformation. This has been a regular topic we've been revisiting this entire last year. It started out with the UK people torching 5G towers over wild conspiracy theories. We have a major problem. Again, it's not one that we can just police out. It's not, oh, we need to make climate deniers illegal. But we've got to find a solution to balancing protected speech, our First Amendment rights, against bad actors that are actively trying to subvert the political process and are trying to destabilize regions with terrible information. We can't have both. We need to find social solutions to these issues. So one of the things that's really going to help is just having better data on how pervasive the issues are. So coming out of Scientific American, written up by, I don't know how to pronounce this last name, Corbin Hyar, Twitter bots are a major source of climate disinformation. Twitter accounts run by machines are a major source of climate change disinformation that might drain support from policies to address rising temperatures. In the weeks surrounding former President Trump's announcement about withdrawing from the Paris Agreement, accounts suspected of being bots accounted for roughly a quarter of all tweets about climate change, according to this new research. I want to get down to, because we're talking millions of tweets. Marlow and the other researchers determined that nearly 9.5% of the users in their samples were likely bots. But those bots accounted for 25% of the total tweets about climate change on most days. The bots were also more prevalent in discussions on climate research and news. Other areas of focus for the bots were tweets that included the term Exxon and research that cast doubt on climate science. One such tweet highlighted a Nobel laureate in physics who falsely claimed global warming is pseudoscience. This is one of the major problems that's facing us in these types of grown-up conversations, is we can't even agree on what reality is because people want to feel good. It's the same issue that we've talked about, from the 5G conspiracy theories to the global pandemic conspiracy theories to people storming the Capitol building right before President Biden's inauguration, flat earthers, anti-vaxxers. There's this spread. It's a viral spread. A bad piece of information gets lodged in someone's brain, and it requires a humongous amount of work to get that piece of information dispelled and removed. And we've not successfully combated these ideas. In fact, they just seem to become further entrenched and further emboldened. So data like this at least helps us narrow down what are the numbers. What is the scale of a bad climate change conspiracy theory? Well, if we're talking about 10 million users sampled and 9% of them are bots, then that's about a million bots generating 25% of the tweets out there. We at least now have some framework for what is the impact and how many fake users do you need to signal boost bad information? Once we get more info like that, we should be able to start figuring out some other ways of combating it. But it's also going to be about putting pressure on social media companies. They love having inflated numbers. Oh, we've got so many users. Yeah, but like at least 15% of them are fake. I mean, that's another thing too. If they're going to charge advertising, like think about a Facebook. Facebook charges money to advertise certain things, and then you expect some kind of return on your advertising investment. You don't want your advertisements to just be consumed by fake bot accounts. But Facebook is conflating their user base and their install base and the number of people who interact on their platform with those fake users. So it's like this big victory. Oh, we cut out like 100,000 bots on our channel. Yeah, but there are millions. I feel like in the future, there could be a lawyer, really savvy lawyer, make a good play on a class action lawsuit against the illusion of Facebook advertising. How little you actually got for your money, how few people you really reached, and the impact of all of these fake accounts that Facebook sort of turns a blind eye to because they want the numbers. That's going to be a major corrective action for social media in the future. And I feel like that's somewhere where we can leverage some pressure. Your social media business is built on users and sharing and tweets and Facebook posts, then you need to be able to verify that these are actually people and not just machines. So it's not great. All right. We've got two more news stories here. I can knock this out in 15 minutes. And they kind of coincide. With President Biden now occupying the Oval Office, even though he still had time on his term left, Ajit Pai, who was never earnestly a public servant, who was never in earnest interested in regulating telecommunications companies, was only interested in occupying that office to further the interests of mega telecoms. He really had time left on his appointment to be as the chairman of the FCC. He could have stayed for another year, but you know what? Probably better just to step down. You know, he's already done what he needed to do. He's already performed the regulatory capture exercise of dismantling a bunch of media buyout protections and consumer protections so that could like charge more for the same basic services and dump billions of dollars of taxpayer dollars into the coffers of private corporations that are then not accountable for any metrics of improvement, just like they've always been lobbying that, well, we need to fund the internet like a utility, but then you can't regulate us like a utility. And we're not responsible for demonstrating that any of the money you gave us actually goes into infrastructure. We just want all the money. You can't tell us what to do. So, his last action in stepping down was to continue perpetrating bad information. I'm really glad Ajit Pai is no longer the chairman of the FCC. So this is written up by Carl Bode. Outgoing FCC's last act is a delusional report that pretends U.S. broadband is wonderful. By law, the FCC is required once a year to issue a report indicating whether quality broadband is being deployed on a reasonable and timely basis. If not, the agency is supposed to, you know, actually do something about it. Unsurprisingly, the Pai FCC last year issued a glowing report declaring that everything was going swimmingly despite some glaring evidence to the contrary, which we talked about how basically the report they put up about broadband deployment, about speeds, about market penetration was basically all lies, that none of it really aligned with reality, and it was all written directly out of the telecommunications industry. We let them self-report, and they reported that everything was great. So, Pai's last FCC progress report also clings tight to the claim that our definition of broadband, 25 meg down and 3 meg up, is still good enough for modern policy making. Quote, "We find that the current speed benchmark of 25 down 3 megabits up remains an appropriate measure by which to assess whether a fixed service is providing advanced telecommunications capability. We conclude that fixed services with speeds of 25.3 continue to meet the statutory definition of advanced telecommunications capability. That is, such services enable users to originate and receive high-quality voice, data, graphics, and video telecommunications." And I love that Carl Bode is basically not playing anymore. The immediate paragraph after is, 3 megabits is pathetic. "It in no way meets the urgency of the moment, and that was before entire families became stuck at home gaming, streaming 4K video, and teleconferencing due to the pandemic. 3 megabits has always been insufficient, and now that we're work and schooling from home, it is even worse." Ajit Pai's tenure at the FCC will be marked as a shameful exercise in mega corporations occupying a regulatory agency. And it just shines even further light on serious people need to be in charge of these committees. Real grown-ups matter when we look at the differences between political parties and political ideologies. When Tom Wheeler was appointed the head of the FCC, I was very, very upset. Tom Wheeler was a former lawyer and advocate for the telecommunications industry. He was known as a lobbyist for telecoms.
when he occupied that position at the FCC, he took his job seriously. I can't point to a better example of the political process really representing the wishes of voters. When we had, under the President Obama's administration, we had Tom Wheeler at the head of the FCC, and we got net neutrality passed. Net neutrality was a decades-long fight in courts, in watching Verizon sue the federal government, in trying to enable regulatory policy through a commission like the FCC, and we eventually got there. Then Trump was elected. Tom Wheeler stepped down. Ajit Pai was put in as the head of the FCC, and we lost decades of legal battling in a year. If you don't think that some kind of representation matters, or that, like, oh, both sides are just the worst, that is one of the best examples that I can point to. For 4 years, we've had a chucklehead with an oversized coffee mug who really wanted to share some tasty memes on the internet. He was just outrage fodder. He only existed to draw awareness away from the real problems. He did his job. He was a patsy for the telecommunications companies. That's what we ended up with. So it affords me calm and great joy to know that not only is Ajit Pai no longer the chairman of the FCC, but that we are moving on with an acting head. The chief of the FCC temporarily is Jessica Rosenworcel, which, again, if you've been following my podcast at all, Jessica Rosenworcel has been one of my absolute favorite figures in the conversation on net neutrality and broadband deployment. She is a boss. Her counterpoints to Ajit Pai's policy have always been razor sharp. Her wit is on point, and her public policy of commenting, like, on platforms like Twitter, has always been about communities and the individual people who have been left behind in our telecom revolution. At this very moment, today, in the United States, the most prosperous first world country on the planet, we can't tell you how many people do not have access to broadband internet. And when we say broadband, we mean the absolutely miserable definition of broadband that Ajit Pai thinks is perfectly adequate for high quality telecommunications. 3 megabit uploads. We can't tell you how many families can't access that. We don't know. All of the metrics that we use to calculate broadband deployment are private and proprietary information of the telecommunications industry. And they self-report. So they can do something like, say, as long as one house in a community has some kind of access to this standard of broadband, we can claim the whole community has it. And that's a lie. That's not true. So it's not even a situation of who can't afford broadband. We literally can't tell you how many homes don't even have access to the pipe potentially going into their homes. And that needs to change. And Jessica Rosenworcel has been leading that conversation politically this entire time. That Ajit Pai has been drafting terrible policy to the benefit of telecoms, Rosenworcel has been the dissenting voice in all of these conversations. She is exactly the kind of grown-up we need leading the charge at the FCC. That's where we need to go from here. We need to support initiatives to bring back net neutrality style policy. We need to re-examine how public tax dollars are spent on fulfilling broadband deployment. We need to look at the communities that need alternatives. Maybe it's a cell phone carrier style implementation, or it's satellite or something, but those more rural individuals can't be left behind. We need to examine the state laws that prevent competition or prevent, a community saying, hey, we want to make our own. We want to do municipal broadband like Chattanooga, Tennessee. All of these things need to be back on the table. I think the only thing that I wish she would discuss more, she hasn't been super stringent on Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. That was something like Trump tried to scrap it through an executive order, which would have been hilarious if it had worked, because then there would have been no protections for companies publishing any conservative speech. Like, it would have been the best way to kill any conservative conversation online. But I think we'd all agree that there needs to be some reform of Section 230 in how a major corporation like a Facebook or a YouTube can hide behind being a publisher and also having editorial control on their platform. We need to re-examine these types of situations. I don't think she's actually been super vocal on that. But the rest of her platform, getting rid of data caps on home broadband, trying to find ways to fund more municipal and community deployment, reinstating net neutrality, these are all the things that we desperately need in a 21st century economy, especially after seeing how necessary the internet was for us living our daily lives. There is no excuse anymore. And there is no good argument anymore to suggest that the internet should not be regulated more like a utility. It is as necessary to our economy as electricity at this point. Sorry, I've got a lot of comments in here, and I know I was kind of monologuing there on the FCC, but if there's ever news about the FCC, it's going to be in my news block for this podcast. The Last Woke. So I know this feel. It's horrible to live in an area where we have to deal with Comcast monopoly or buy Verizon 10 megabit down DSL. That is the situation I'm in too. Only swap out Comcast for Spectrum. And then in my area, you totally have a choice. You can spend a lot of money on Spectrum for my data rates are okay, but my podcast right now is constantly dipping into there's like a little performance meter on OBS. And it, green shows that you've got a stable connection, dips into the yellow, orange, red, and then it cuts my podcast off. I'm constantly in the yellow for paying a lot of money. And it's technically 400 down, which is pretty good. That's fast, but 20 up. 20 up is not sufficient. I want high quality video chats. I want my daughter to be able to engage in school. My wife is working from home. We struggle with 20 up with all of the conference calls and podcasting and videos, uploading higher quality content. It is not enough, especially for the amount of money we pay. I can pay the exact same amount of money for the competition. Well, if I don't like Spectrum, I can just take my money elsewhere. And it's the exact same thing, the last. It's miserable gut rot DSL. It's like, I want to say it's 20 down, 10 up. No. It's 30 down because it is technically broadband. And broadband is 25 megabits down. So fast. Same thing. And it's the same amount of money because it's internet. Internet, just like Spectrum internet. And Dave Burns, that's it, man. Fiber to home. When we paid hundreds of billions of dollars in taxpayer subsidies, in carrier and telecom fees, in sweetheart deals, zoning, taxes, hundreds of billions of dollars, and they never gave us fiber to home, we got screwed. All right, that's going to wrap us up for the news block. Keep an eye on Jessica Rosenworcel. Follow her on Twitter. I'm telling you, this is one of the most consistent, mature, and empathetic conversations on technology. We talk about tech empathy, the people being left behind, the people who are not relevant in a 21st century economy, the people who will face fewer and fewer possibilities for finding the new jobs and the new educational opportunities, and even just the new entertainment of the 21st century. She has been at the forefront of that conversation. It matters when we see a photo of kids sitting out on the sidewalk of a Taco Bell, because that's the only way they can get their schoolwork done, is to piggyback on their Wi-Fi after having to buy, you know, like a 3-pack of tacos. That is not what America should be. That's not what America should stand for. And she represents that conversation well. All right. Oh, gotta stretch. And the last two, I mean, Comcast just basically threw data caps on everyone's internet, even though data caps have never been shown to actually achieve, or there's no reason to put data caps on. Yeah, I could go on, but I want to start talking about some gadgets. So I got my kind of stretch in here. And I think this is a good time to shout out the subreddit. Every podcast has a subreddit. You can't really escape the Reddits these days. My podcast is no exception, but what I try to do is use Reddit as a platform to help share and promote content that deserves more attention. So instead of it just being solely about the idea of kind of, you know, echo chambering already tentpole popular content, I really wanted a platform to help promote channels that are growing, someone who hasn't yet reached monetization, or channels that are bigger, but maybe they're struggling in this kind of current flavor of YouTube algorithm. So if you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, you're going to see a significantly broader conversation about technology than what YouTube is going to fill in your recommended videos. I'm really proud of the community that's building and growing every week. And it's super organic. We're not trying to play with numbers. We're not trying to manipulate. You know, that's what the YouTube and Facebook algorithms are. It's a way to manipulate user behavior. Here, we're just trying to promote stuff we think is cool. It's very grassroots. And I feel it's a better representation of the tech community at large. More inclusive, if you will. So these are the top stories on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. A number one, coming by way of Adam Reviews Tech with 1,500 subscribers. OnePlus 7 Pro 2021 review. Is it the best value phone now? That's a very good question. I feel it's always going to be a really fun debate. Do you buy a purpose-built mid-ranger, or do you pick up an older flagship phone? So not just like, oh, well, I mean, the OnePlus 8 Pro is a phone from 2020, and now we're in 2021. It's ancient. You can go back farther. The OnePlus 7 Pro, I mean, again, it was ahead of the curve for the camera sensor using a pixel binning technology. The Snapdragon 855 is still overkill for most daily computing tasks. Has fast charging. The periscoping camera is cute. It's always fun watching someone when you see the little periscope camera pop up. That thing, you know, people light up. Oh, it's a cute little camera. OnePlus 7 Pro makes some solid arguments for its existence today, especially against phones that they might sell for cheaper today, but they might only get one major Android update. Like, I'm a big fan of the Nord N10. I did an audio deep dive on how nifty that phone might be. The TCL, also kind of a cool phone, but I don't know that we're going to count on those manufacturers to give us 3 years of software support. So if you're balancing that kind of stuff, might you go with an older premium tier flagship, or will you go with the purpose-built mid-ranger? That's a fun debate. Totally deserving. Top spot on the subreddit this last week. In the number two spot, Some doofus wearing a flat cap with a super punchable face talking about politics. Ugh. You can miss me with that politics. I'm a techie, and I'm above any political conversations because politics is messy and gross, and we only want to talk about megapickles and giggle flips, and no one cares about politics. I can't believe this shill made it to the second place of his own subreddit. Number three, the Google Pixel 4a is still great in 2021, coming by way of Team Vry, 1,200 subscribers. Galaxy Buds in 2021 from Tech PhD. The end of LG. LG leaving the smartphone market in 2021 from Painfully Honest Tech. We've got Jay Williams checking out the cameras on the LG Wing. iPad Pro from Poetic Wiz, rounding out the top 10 with 125 subscribers. And I really want you to think, when was the last time you got served up a video from YouTube from someone who only had 125 subscribers? For me, it's been a while. I can't think of many times where I've noticed that pop up in my recommended video watching. So, if you care about your tech commentary and you care that it's not just overweighted and graded on a curve of popularity for the largest handful of tech YouTube channels, maybe check out this subreddit, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. We need all the participation and sharing we can get. It's an easy and convenient way to support your favorite content creators, to support content that you feel deserves more attention. And it's also in my plea every week. We're getting a lot of really great submissions. Don't be stingy with the upvotes. You scroll through, find some content creators you like, click that up arrow because it makes that content more search viable. If something is popular on Reddit, it shows up more in general search around the internet. So, make sure you're putting the name of the channel in the description. Make sure you're clicking the up arrow whenever you come to visit and dropping some comments. We can start having some more conversations about this stuff. If we really love tech, this is my attempt at trying to improve the tech landscape. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and tell them Juan sent you, because you're probably going to tell me that I sent you, and that'll make me happy. All right, mug of water number two. Let me take a quick sip here as I just kind of go through here. Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey, Juan, and hey, guys. Thank you for having me. And this is Thunder E from Bored at Work. Now, if you don't know me or don't know my channel, Bored at Work has been around for about 10 years or so on YouTube, and I cover an array of really cool tech items. I like to see things that, we all want to get, want to buy, want to try out. And for me, that revolves around a lot of gaming as well. So I do gaming on smartphones, gaming on consoles, as well as also gaming on PCs, doing some PC builds as well. So if you like all that kind of stuff, you definitely check it out. Plus, I'm a big audio guy. I love my headphones, just like Juan, who loves his audio. Yes, we can talk about audio all day. And I have a rather large collection, about 50, maybe 52 headphones. But I'd love to review them and find out the best ones you guys can go ahead and try out. So if you want to see more of that stuff, go ahead and check out Bored at Work, spelled BOOREDATWORK. So Bored at Work with two O's. And thank you, Juan, for having me. And back to you.
Squishy Man 2007. Past few days, I turned on my G6 and it works fine for the basics and such, and a headphone jack. So there's that. We still use, we haven't for the last year because we haven't done any traveling. But the last big trip we took as a family, the LG G6 was my daughter's movie phone. Just put in a honking huge memory card and just dumped it full of her favorite movies. We have a bunch of Blu-ray rips of her favorite movies saved. I mean, at the time, it was just Netflix. We saved a bunch of movies for offline play from Netflix.
That phone is such a champ because my daughter is not kind. She is not careful with things like electronics. So even sitting on a little airplane, sitting in an airplane with the little fold-out tray, I put it in a GorillaPod, hooked her up with some wireless headphones, and just let her go to town. That G6 is still a champ. It's such a great little phone. So, yeah, again, I feel there are very good reasons to look at older phones as good solutions. All right, into the gadget block. Now, this is a really heavy rumor and leak kind of gadget block. We're going to be talking about Huawei and Honor. We're going to be talking about LG. I really wanted to start with some stories about Apple. This is a story that happened a couple weeks back. And I've been keeping it on the list, but I haven't really talked about it or covered it. Excuse me. But I haven't really covered it on the show. Hold on, let me get another drink of water. I can't quite clear this little frog in my throat. Okay, good. I am a passionate advocate for, you know, tech and politics, and then also for hearing health. That is my other major soapboxy situation. So it brings me great sadness to see the conversation around iPhones so reductive. In fact, there was an article from Forbes that was like, this one feature on the iPhone is going to drive millions to Android, which we all know is dumb. Forbes, come on, that was dumb. But I'm talking about the iPhone headphone volume situation. So this is coming by macworld.co.uk, written up by David Price. iPhones cut headphone volume and won't turn back up. A feature designed to protect users' hearing has instead caused a furor after iPhone owners noticed that music volume sometimes dropped after 15 minutes and in some cases couldn't be turned back up. Writing for Forbes, Barry Collins reports that the headphone safety feature in iOS 14 is designed to both warn the user if audio is loud enough and prolonged enough to damage their hearing based on WHO recommendations, and to enforce this by automatically cutting the volume. So, a lot of people are complaining about this. And they shouldn't be. They should be looking at buying better headphones. That's always been the gig. This entire time I've been complaining about audio tech for consumers, Apple has been one of the leading companies in delivering garbage earbuds to consumers. The more I use them and the more I play with them, the more I genuinely do not believe the people who sit there and claim, oh, but I need the situational awareness. I can't do cans or in-ears or any other type of headphone because I need to hear what's going on around me. If that were true, I don't think people would be complaining about a volume cut feature on the iPhone. Because the reality of this is, as soon as you go outside and you really can hear the world around you, most people are inclined to turn the volume up to drown out the world around them. It's not a feature. It is a way that Apple can include or sell a cheaper accessory and subsidize their profits on your hearing health. It's the only way around it. We're watching correlating rates of hearing loss in all age demographics, especially in young people, along with the rise of smartphones and portable media players. That's what happens. So if you're concerned about the iPhone cutting volume, first, I'd say look at some better earbuds, look at some better headphones, play around with options that might be able to fit your ears better. Oh, but I tried this one ear tip and it didn't work. Okay, try any other ear tip. They're cheap and they're better for your ears. Because let me tell you, spending like $20 to sample some Comply foam ear tips and some other, maybe you get dual flange or triple flange earplug style ear tips, it's a lot cheaper than spending $3,000 to $5,000 per ear on hearing aids when you're in your 40s. But again, maybe you just really hate your ears. In that case, keep sticking with open ear earbuds. If that's your jam, go to town. Because if you really want good situational awareness, there are other technologies that are way better for your ears, like bone conduction. Complaining that Apple is now being a nanny in this regard is hilarious, because it's largely Apple responsible for setting this trend of kind of popularizing the lazily convenient open ear earbud, and now they're trying to kind of rein this in. The healthcare costs associated with hearing damage are going to be increasingly expensive over the next two generations of consumers. Because it's not just, oh, I can't hear things as well, maybe I need a hearing aid. It's also going to be increased likelihood of injury from falls, from losing balance, damaging the ear. Damage is a part of your anatomy that also is responsible for you standing upright. We're seeing increased correlation between hearing loss and degenerative and dementia-styled diseases. So now increased costs for healthcare workers as we look at, you know, going deaf contributing to the brain literally scrambling itself. We have so much work to do there, and it's not as sexy or as cool as getting an HD screen with OLED and juicy colors in HDR. Ew. But no, this is what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen. With increased pressure from regulators on manufacturers like Apple, they're going to start taking those controls out of your hands. So the best solution is find ways that you can listen at lower levels. You cannot listen at a lower level unless you block noise. And open ears with ANC, that's not it. That's not a thing. I leave the house every day with some type of in-ear earbud. And it's literally just the safety of, I might need to wear some earplugs. I was at a concert and I'm looking like a doofus because I've got my earbuds in my ears blocking my ears. But you know what? I left that concert having heard the music better and without my ears ringing from how loud it was. That was pretty nice. I would definitely recommend that to more people. Awesome possum. Dissociative hallucinations from infrasonic damage? ? Well, that's also kind of what tinnitus is. Tinnitus isn't just a defect in the ear. It is also a lack of information being sent to the brain, so the brain just starts making information up. It is, in essence, an audio hallucination. And it can get more severe than just, oh, I kind of hear a little bit of a ringing. There are some people who complain about tinnitus-like symptoms of it starting to approximate speech, like they're hearing voices. Like, that's how bad this can get. And yet, we're still like, oh, Apple's going to make me turn down the volume. Meh. We got to spread the word better than this. This is ridiculous. Just also as another safety warning out there, I've got to pull it up over here. I didn't organize my tabs. Let me move this. iPhone 12, this is not, I don't feel like this is a substantial demographic concern, but it's one where if someone might be affected by this, they definitely need to know better than Apple's little like warning on pacemakers. So the iPhone 12 has MagSafe, little magnets in the back of the phone. Apparently, those magnets can interfere with pacemakers. I'm going to be linking to this. This is from John Fingus over at Engadget. Just a quick little write-up. Give it a read. Share it with your family and friends. My dad does not have a pacemaker, so no worries there. And he's not likely to own an iPhone. He just got a Pixel. But I would imagine that other manufacturers are going to look to implement similar magnetic clip-on charging things, because then you can charge more for the phone and charge more for chargers. It's gross. Apple did it, so now everyone else is going to copy it. The thing about my dad, he loves little phones because he does keep them in a shirt pocket. He does keep them in a jacket pocket. We can't just write it off like, oh, who's like really keeping a phone in their shirt pocket? No. A lot of people do. And I'm sure it's a very tiny segment of our population who the Venn diagram overlap of keeps phone in shirt pocket and has a pacemaker. But I would hate for one person to fall prey to an issue with their pacemaker because of a goofy feature on an iPhone. So if you have any family and friends who are affected by medical conditions or have internal equipment, you know, and again, this is a decently strong magnetic connection on the back of the phone. And maybe, you know, maybe it's a gastro stimulator, maybe it's a pacemaker, maybe it's any other type of internal augmentation to their physiology. Give them a heads up. Like, hey, I don't know if you were thinking about being an iPhone. I saw this. I care about you. Just want you to know. And I feel like that's about as much as we need. It's not a don't buy the iPhone or how could Apple have goofed. It's tech empathy. It is being a good tech neighbor just to say, on the outside chance, you probably need to know this. Phones with magnets, maybe not for you. McCorkerin, my tinnitus told me to buy a pair of AirPods. Yeah, maybe. Like, hey, we want more hallucinatory friends, so buy some AirPods. A Muppinish future article, iPhone 30 shorts Neuralink when in close proximity. Yeah, I'm gonna have to be real careful because I am definitely of the ilk that would be all about neural implants, but man, I don't know. We've got a lot to sort out on the integrated consumer electronics industry. Excuse me. From Pakistan, were the magnets in the Nexus 5 inefficiently strong, or are the magnets in the iPhone just that unnecessarily overkill? It's not that I think they're unnecessary overkill. I think the implementation is different by design to support the full weight of the phone and potentially a light phone case. So someone correct me if I'm wrong, but the idea of MagSafe is that you could potentially have like a desktop stand that fully supports and locks the phone into the correct orientation for the most efficient wireless charging. It is one of the major problems with wireless charging. If your coils are off by just a little bit, it is substantially less efficient and generates a lot more heat to get the same degree of charging. So Apple's solution is a little cheeky in that they're going to clip it and force the phone into the correct orientation. But then it also could be aesthetic, where you can prop it up in a really clean way. It's kind of cool. I mean, just in a nice bedside table kind of arrangement, that's kind of nifty. I mean, it is. It is kind of tech cool, fashionable. But because of that, it's a very different style of magnetic solution than some of the older, like especially whenever we would have magnets to do things like have a light screen cover snap. You know, like if you had a wallet case and it would kind of stick to the phone, those magnets don't need to be very strong at all. MagSafe is a very different situation. All right. Why don't we talk a little about some Huawei, because we're getting conflicting reports. As soon as I started writing up the list for the show notes for this week, another article came sneaking in. Muppinish, who needs a wallet case? Stares at Duo. I love my Duo. It is such a cool ass phone. All right, pulling this up. This is directly from Reuters. China's Huawei in talks to sell premium smartphone brands P and Mate, says sources. China's Huawei Technologies is in early stage talks to sell its premium smartphone brands P and Mate. Two people with direct knowledge of the matter said a move that could see the company eventually exit from the high-end smartphone making business. The talks between the world's largest telecommunications equipment maker and a consortium led by Shanghai government-backed investment firms have been going on for months, for people said, declining to be identified as the discussions were confidential. Huawei started to internally explore the possibility of selling the brands as early as last September, according to one of the sources. Here we go. Shipments of Mate and P-series phones were worth $39.7 billion between quarter three 2019 and quarter three 2020. That even with all of the sanctions on Huawei, they didn't slip in the smartphone rankings selling internationally. So it year over year, it didn't really seem to dent them much, just with the tech that they had on hand and the manufacturing agreements that were still to be fulfilled, and not even having those precious Google Play services that the rest of the world really isn't as concerned about as techies claim average consumers are. It seemed like Huawei was able to tread water. Whether or not they'll be able to continue doing that for years to come is definitely another issue. But immediately after catching that story from Reuters, GSM Arena published a rebuttal to that topic. Let me get this out of the way. Huawei, no plans to sell mobile business. In response, Huawei officials... Sorry, who wrote this up? Really? Does GSM Arena not have a byline? Weird. Anyway, Huawei, no plans to sell mobile business. We'll keep making high-end phones. In response, Huawei officials have issued a statement to Chinese media that the company has no plans to sell its mobile phone business and that it will continue building high-end phones. Statement does not detail how that will happen, though. Currently, the company has no source of chipsets for its flagship models. HiSilicon is barred from TSMC fabs. Qualcomm and MediaTek are not allowed to sell chips to Huawei. After the Trump administration put Huawei on the entity list, U.S. companies and those relying on U.S. tech required a license to trade with Huawei. Now, some companies were granted such licenses eventually, but a report from a week ago indicated that some of those were revoked. And the Biden administration has so far given no indications as to how it will handle this situation going forward. So here's one of the things that gets really messy when we start talking about humongous umbrella corporations. Huawei, we're going to be talking about LG to kind of round out this podcast. And one of the other stories, one of the leaks that came out is an Honor. And Honor was a subsidiary brand of Huawei that got that brand did get portioned out of the Huawei umbrella to be sort of its own unique entity. It's difficult because internal conversations range the entire gamut of potential solutions to issues like these. Internally at Huawei, I'm sure there are active and aggressive conversations about selling off the smartphone business, and probably happening on a daily basis. That's not an indication that will be the eventuality of their smartphone business, is that they're a mega corporation. They've got a number of different business initiatives. They've got to look at costs. They've got to look at profits. And at some point, you have to have a conversation internally about what makes sense. Do we keep it? Do we shutter it? Do we sell off patents, or do we sell the whole division? That is happening every day. So when we get one leaked communication, or when we get one off the record source saying, you know, they're thinking about selling off the Mate and the P series phone lines, it's definitely been discussed. Of course it has. Of course it's been discussed. You need to, if you're doing any of your due diligence in running a corporation. Yes, you talk about what might happen if things don't change, or if you run out of parts, or who would be able to put money in our coffers to take this business off our hands. It is the reality of any business initiative or global organization. Speaking specifically about Huawei, I have not gotten my hands on a Huawei since the Mate 20, and that's made me really sad. I've reached out to Huawei PR. I really haven't been able to subsidize the cost of importing one just to kind of run a little bit of a review on one, but even just trying to get a loaner, where I've been a big fan of Huawei hardware, Huawei phones. I still regularly use that little Huawei laptop that they put out years ago. I like what they bring to the table and are still, even in light of this entities list preventing a number of business relationships, still one of the more innovative and aggressive smartphone manufacturers out there. It's not to say I don't believe Huawei doesn't deserve some kind of market correction for some of their business practices, but that's a regulatory issue. I still haven't seen good enough evidence to suggest that the consumer electronics side of Huawei deserves the same kind of security scrutiny or more security scrutiny than any other smartphone manufacturer. I they're never going to give us evidence. They're never going to give us data, but what we've seen and how we see the company conducts itself, I haven't seen where, outside of maybe some regulatory issues, that Huawei is deserving of this kind of blacklisting. So it puts us in a very precarious situation. I'll actually be kind of surprised if Huawei phones aren't sold off by next year, if nothing changes. It's just going to be an increasingly unsustainable manufacturing model. You can't keep scrounging for parts when companies can't sell you parts. The chilling effect of this entities list is actually starting to manifest. I would believe that Huawei probably has a runway. And I would imagine that a good chunk of 2021 can exist comfortably on this runway. And it's telling that it's the premium tier devices that are the most concerning. You know, again, you need the most bleeding edge components. You need the best displays. You need the highest end chipsets. That kind of stuff, it would make sense that if you were going to get rid of any line of phones, it would be the most costly to manufacture, sells to the smallest consumer demographic, and is likely not very profitable as compared to the more bread and butter mainstream mid-ranger smartphones out there. Again, where Huawei is still really strong. So it would make me concerned and it would make me kind of sad, but I actually feel like it's likely, not a foregone conclusion, something could change politically over the next year. And I bet you Huawei business executives are hoping something shakes up the current relations between Eastern and Western governments to enable a new conversation at the bargaining table. That's where I think we're at. So in the short term, you make the public statement, no, we're not looking at selling this off. We're not looking at getting rid of these phones. In the medium term, you're really hoping that you can get some kind of negotiation happening. And then in the slightly longer term viewpoint, yeah, of course it's on the table. And it probably will happen if the medium term solution doesn't come to pass. Thank you, Aditya and Matt, for telling me to drink some more water. But yeah, I don't know. I really do want to play with another Huawei. It's been frustrating and it's been sad, especially for photography and those newer camera sensors that are just monster camera sensors. I'd really like to see firsthand what they can do, especially for how poor the camera conversation has been. Oh, I'm not going to review a Pixel 5 against a Galaxy S21 because the Pixel's camera sensor's too small. Yeah, that's lazy reviewing. You can do better than that. Just in following up on Huawei, I did want to put this out here. My main experience with Huawei products was Honor. The View 20 is still... Okay, so first of all, the Honor 8, all time, top 10 list. I mean, it's probably like number 3 on the best looking phone I've ever reviewed. And it's still the phone I was asked most about when I was using that phone out in public. I had grocery store cashiers like get into conversations with me about that phone. Of course, most of the time it was like, what case do you have on your iPhone? And then you'd have to explain it was a different phone. But there was huge interest. Honor has always been this kind of like this little companion company that has done phenomenal stuff. But the Honor View 20 is still a phone that I kind of go back to for it being older and kind of this premium mid-ranger, it's still laptop-grade computing that fits in your pocket, has a phenomenal desktop mode, is still a wonderful camera package. It's such a good option, and it has aged so well. So when I see that Honor splitting from Huawei, they're finally getting their feet under them, and they're getting ready to put out a new View, I am very curious and hopeful that this will see some wider international release. So the View 40 is Honor's first phone after splitting with Huawei. It's a 6.7-inch OLED, 120 hertz refresh rate, so I'm assuming it's probably a 1080p display. MediaTek Dimensity 1000 Plus, and I'm very interested in seeing that kind of performance with Huawei, or I should say Honor optimizations, especially the software package that runs on Huawei phones, not being tremendously dissimilar from Huawei, in the past was always well focused on efficiency and kind of cleaning out Android in the background. 8 gigabytes of RAM, up to 256 gigabytes of storage, 4,000 milliamp hour battery, Mahung card. So it's not a Domino rear camera module, but there's a lot of cameras on the back. 50 megapixel main camera, 8 megapixel ultra wide, and a 2 megapixel macro. The 2 megapixel macros, you can miss me with those. The 5 megapixel macros are a little bit better. But they're putting this all together in a 5G package, a decently high-tiered Dimensity, which should perform roughly in the Snapdragon 855 range of performance. $600. $600 for the 256 gig variant of the phone. Like, that's not bad. That's pretty competitive. And I feel like this is going to be the first year where we really kind of cycle through all of those techs, you know, high refresh rate, multiple camera arrays, 5G, and hopefully better radio management and carrier aggregation. It's a solid combination. And at $600, I feel pretty good about that as some kind of a value offering. It could be interesting. Right now, it's only slated to hit China. But this is a phone that I hope finds a wider release, especially throughout the EU. Like, this could be a really strong performer to kind of rebuild Honor in the EU. I mean, I'm sure the United States is last on the list. You know, North America is probably way down on the list of potential markets to sell this phone, but I'd still like to give it a spin. And again, I just have such fond memories of all of my Honor devices. The Honor 10, the View 10 was a good phone. TK and I were supposed to give one of those away. I wonder if we ever did. DT and Nil, $600 for that goodness, me like. I think it looks solid. Couple other. So Aditya was saying maybe they meant Mahjong, and I think that's what they meant, but they quoted Mahong. So I don't know if that was just a misspell. I do want to point this out because I'm a big old Sony nerd. And especially if LG walks away from my favorite style of phones, I think Sony might need to be my jam. let me get this out of the way here. This is from OnLeaks, Steve Hemmerstoffer. This is the new Xperia Compact, the iPhone 12 mini rival Android fans need. So we might see a return to the Sony Compact this year. There have been rumors circulating, since the Sony Xperia XZ Compact 2. We've been seeing some type of, for the next compact, we're going to get something like this. And after we saw the Xperia 5, I felt like it was even more likely that we might see some kind of smaller form factor, one-thumb Sony. Keeping the same style of like a really tall cinema display, but keeping some of the bezels. So there is a little forehead and chin. This one has a bit more of a water drop notch. Let me see if they shared the other photo closer up. No, they didn't. So you can kind of see in the photos, like right in there. It's right in there. A little bit more of that water drop LG style notch, but I like having this bezel up here. Sony stereo speakers are usually pretty solid. And if we can get, you know, comparable internals, I want the phone to be a little bit thicker, have a decently sized battery, and have a top of the line chipset, and maybe driving a slightly lower resolution display is kind of fine. But keep this really hard-edged, angular, sort of the, you know, 2001 A Space Odyssey, you know, that kind of obelisk look, harder, flatter sides, nice, you know, the slightly rounded corners, but this is a rectangle of a phone. I just think it's hilarious that, like, measuring barely their dimensions, whatever. The upcoming and quite blocky looking 5.5 inch Xperia Compact is smaller than the 5.7 Xperia XZ2, but larger than the recently launched 5.4 inch iPhone 12 mini. This is because the new phone's flat display is surrounded by thick bezels and a huge chin. Really? So that's thick and huge now, huh? That's what we're going with. I feel like tech reviewing has completely lost the plot. I'm cool with that for bezels. I feel like that's going to be fine. It's a bit of a picture frame effect. It's not it's not something to comment on as like some kind of tragic aesthetic misstep. But what I would hope to see is that we're getting comparable camera sensors, because it looks like it would only be a two camera setup. I really hope it's the larger main sensor with the crazy scary autofocus, and they're ultra wide, which is also autofocus enabled. You give me an Xperia Mini with the same general, you know, Photo Pro, Cinema Pro camera apps. You know, you can still cut some professional content. You still have the top of the line powerful internals. I would be very happy with that phone existing. I'm really hoping that this one comes true.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
Dave Burns. But one, it's not as popular, and I need to confirm my reader's bias. And JMX, I'm with you, bud. Bezels are good, not bad. Yeah, it's always disappointing to me when it's like, oh no, this phone is already going to lose. I mean, the tricky thing is making a mini phone in this day and age is an interesting flex, because it's still going to be expensive. It's a Sony, but it's also not going to be as capable for media consumption and gaming. Smaller screens are more difficult to use for certain applications. So it's all about keeping your predictions and your audience in mind. As long as you keep your expectations in check for how many of these you're going to sell, you can make a really compelling argument for a mini phone. I think Apple overestimated how many people would want the iPhone 12 mini, especially after how well the iPhone SE sold. iPhone SE is a great mini communicator phone. And it focuses very well on those brief interactions, short form bursts of communication, taking phone calls, listening to podcasts. It's stellar. I don't know that I need an iPhone 12 for that. I definitely don't need extra horsepower that I can't really use. A 5G radio in that smaller shell with a tiny battery, not the gig. It's the wrong collection for the consumer who might be interested in a communicator phone. So again, you have to expect that that's going to be a smaller chunk of an already smaller potential audience. People who got iPhone SEs are probably happy. They probably don't want to spend more for that experience. An Xperia Mini or a new Xperia Compact, I would imagine, is a niche of a niche that you got to make sure you're not making too many of those. But it's but I think it's there is an audience for it. You know, Pixel 4a selling pretty well. Pixel 5 sold better than Google assumed it would sell. iPhone SE totally saved Apple's early quarters in 2020. Small phones have a very respectable place at the table. It's just you've got to make sure you're keeping the audience and the potential audience in mind and not oversell the phone. The expectations, the number of people there, it's probably a fairly easy market to saturate. So McCorkran, I mean, actually, this doesn't hold true. Apparently, small phones are not as popular as we thought. No, I mean, like, the Pixel 4a sells well. The iPhone SE sold really well. The Pixel 5 outsold Google's expectations. Like, there is a market for this. But we need to keep our expectations in line with what the real consumer demographic is. Otaku 2X with a highlighted message. My V60 has bezels and a notch. I know what you're thinking. How did you survive? I didn't. I had a heart attack that caused me to lose control of my limbs and I had to receive robotic implants, but I survived. I am now someone else. I am something else. I am the doesn't mind bezels all that much man. And now you need a really cool 70s theme song. And he fights crime. Hickey85, yeah, we are Borg. That is definitely true. Okay. It's a Sony, though, so color me interested. The Xperias have been so strong. People sleeping on Sonys don't get it. It's not the thing to say, like, hey, you know, you shouldn't like your phone because another phone exists. Love the phone that's in your pocket right now. But if we're techies and part of our entertainment is looking at the landscape of competition, people sleeping on Sony are not it. I can't tell you, like, just how many truly wonderful experiences I've had with the Xperia 1 Mark II. I am still super cranky, though, that I can't get the Android 11 update here in the United States. Fat Produce, what are you wanting to see in the Xperia 1 Mark III? Okay. I would like to see a proper cinema 4K display. So right now, even though this is one of the highest resolution OLEDs that has ever been put into any phone ever, it is technically a UHD video crop. So the height is 3840. What I would like is for the width to hit 2160. And that would mean 2160 by 4096. I actually think that would be pretty cool. At that point, we are literally at the complete breaking point of further resolution being detectable by any members of our species. We like to say, oh, if you hold your phone out like a foot away from your face and you have average eyesight, then you can't even see the pixels. But some people have better eyesight. Some people have magnification, like lenses that they wear on their face that can sometimes produce issues with pentile subpixel arrangements, that kind of shimmery screen door effect. And we also have a number of people in our society that seem to suffer from issues related to staring at screens all day. So if we push to the point where the people with the absolute best hawk-like vision cannot see a difference or cannot discern individual pixels while holding the phone at the closest minimum focusing distance of the human eye, then we're done. We don't need to go any higher than that. We have achieved the top resolution possible for the human eye to resolve under any circumstances. So I'd like to see just that nudge. I think that would be kind of cool. I would like to see consistent 4K 60 frame per second recording on all three cameras. Right now, the Xperia is also like the current LG, where the ultra wide does not shoot 4K 60. I really feel like that would be a bit more of a perk. I want to see a better global mode for HS power control. So heat suppression, HS power control, is where you plug the phone in and it works per app in your game settings. So you go into your game settings and say, this app, I want you to bypass battery charging. And so the phone runs a little bit cooler because it's only using the power to run the phone. Excuse me. It's not charging the battery very aggressive. It's like a tiny little trickle charge, but it's not like even a regular charge speed. It's not like a 5-watt charger. It's really low level. It's very, very slow. What I'd like is a setting just global for the whole phone. When I'm using the cameras and the Cinema Pro app and the Photo Pro app, I'd like to be able to plug into an external power source, run the cameras longer and harder, and not generate additional heat from the battery. So for me, I'm very happy with the Xperia 1. Oh, also a louder amp on the headphone jack, but I don't think Sony's ever going to give us that. It would just be nice. That said, I would really love to see an Xperia 1 Mark III in almost exactly the same shell as the Xperia 1 Mark II. If you could make it the exact same shell, that would make me so happy. Keeping the cases, the mounts, the cradles. I've got camera attachments that work really well with the rectangular form factor of the Xperia 1. If I want to bolt it to one of my Panasonics, or if I want to clip it to, like, you know, the Alpha, the A7S III that I'm borrowing right now, it's so cool. I'd love to keep all of that consistent. I really wish manufacturers wouldn't change the externals of their phone for 3 years, and we could all just keep the same accessories, the same cases, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, it's really hard to find a phone from 2020, which was as good of a total package device as the Xperia 1 Mark II. Headphone jack, wireless charging, a very high resolution display with, a black frame insertion trick, which worked well for simulating a 90 Hertz display, even though it wasn't really as fluid as a real 90 Hertz display. Stereo speakers, decently rated for water resistance, but you don't have a pin tool. The tray for your SIM card and memory card comes right out. You just pull a fingernail in there and it pops right out. I mean, just overall, just a phenomenally well-considered total package phone. And I'd love them just to refine. I just want light touch refinement over what we got on the Xperia 1 Mark II. Maybe a slightly larger camera sensor for the ultra wide. That'd be kind of nice also. But yeah, I mean, the autofocus performance is so scary good. I kind of don't want them to change the main sensor. I'd like them to leave that alone. All right, we're getting into the end here. I got to get my last cup of water here. And bring this back. According to leaks, the Xperia 10 Mark III will keep the same body, maybe ever so slightly smaller. Okay. Raymond at 643 PPI. I need to do the math again. Years ago, using what doctors claimed was the visual acuity of the human eye. I actually did all of the math on the arc minutes of resolution and trying to compare that against how we measure display resolution. And it was. It was something like if you hold your phone 6 inches away from your face and you have 20/20 vision, then your maximum ability to resolve dots on a screen was somewhere around a 4K display on a 6-inch 16x9 slab. I need to do the math on that again, but if Sony could give us Cinema 4K 4096, I feel we'd be done. And it's just frustrating again, because, you know, now a Galaxy has 1080p and all of these techies are like, oh, it's fine. You can't even see it. You can't even see. I'm telling you, if you like setting your font to the absolute smallest pitch like I do, you can. I'm not saying it's a deal breaker, but you can see the difference. And Pentile OLED displays, not so great. Not so great when you make them larger and you reduce the resolution. All right. I just want to kind of wrap this up as we get into the last 10 minutes here. Steve, Q3 Becker, subscribed with Prime, subscribed for 14 months. Boop. Hey, Steve, thank you so much for supporting. I definitely appreciate that. And that was super awesome of you. Steve is rad, like Paul. We talked about this a lot on the TK stream. Best of our week, episode 6, talking about the end of LG. This is going to mirror some of what I just said about Huawei. A memo went out talking about the potential of how to handle LG's smartphone business. Uh-oh, there's a hype train incoming. What? What is this? I have not seen this before. Paul Puri is gifting tier one subs like crazy. And apparently Hype Train is you can sub, gift, or use bits to get to the next level. We're at 22%. I am not Twitch enough to know what the heck Hype Train is, but it's level 4, and that sounds like kind of a big deal. So, Paul, wow, man, wow. Thanks for jumping on that. Big ups, much respect. Christmas came early. So, huge. Thanks. Hype Train. Yes. Sorry. Let's get back to LG while my voice still holds out, because we will have to end this in just a bit. And Hype Train has 4 minutes. So jump on it. Oh, and again, I got to say, for Udetain Pico 1, also, thank you for jumping in. I definitely appreciate that. I definitely appreciate the support. Yeah, man, Paul is definitely the king of Twitch chat. That's huge. Sorry. A lot of what I just said about Huawei. A memo went out saying we're examining all potential, solutions for the smartphone business. And they listed, they could sell off the smartphone division. They could close the smartphone division. They could downsize the smartphone division. It's frustrating because LG operates in such a messaging vacuum. Their PR is very passive, especially here in North America. A new phone comes out, and then it almost feels like LG kind of disappears from the conversation. They aren't putting out subsequent ads. They aren't reinforcing the messaging. It's just like, here it is. You can buy it. Okay, bye. And then they're just gone. And in that absence, in that messaging vacuum, it allows basically every hack tech influencer to step up and be like, oh, they're not worth it. And they get to define the conversation about LG products. LG doesn't do this with their appliances, right? LG defines the conversation around LG TVs. They don't do it around their phones. And it's a little sad, because I've worked very closely with LG PR reps for North America, and they care. These people work at LG and they genuinely care about doing a good job. It just kind of feels like a more global initiative from the head of the parent company in South Korea. And it seems like often their hands are tied at engaging more and delivering more of that commentary. So a memo like this gets leaked, and it shouldn't be big news. LG has an underperforming smartphone division. They've been in the red for a while now. Internally at LG, it would be criminal of them to not be examining the potentials of what to do with the smartphone division. They are having those conversations every day. Not only just what new products or what new phones should we deliver, but how can we return to profitability? How can we improve market share? How can we improve regional distribution? What do we do? Someone might make an offer. A company could come in and offer them a bunch of money just to give them their smartphone division. That has to be discussed. So you look at that memo and there's no indication that there is a strong possibility of LG just shuttering their smartphone division. But what does the internet do? The tech internet runs with the end of LG, LG closing up shop. It's over for LG smartphones. Who did it? Was it Android Authority? Or was it Android Central? Shutting down LG smartphones is good for nobody but LG. You're like, okay. Where was this concern over competition when LG phones were out and you had a bunch of reviewers saying how the V60 wasn't exciting enough? Now the Galaxy S21 is a great buy because it's cheaper. But the LG V60 last year, who would want that? That's not exciting. All right. Hype Train success. I received a level 3 Hype Train emote. What? Choo choo. I choo choo choose you. And it's got a picture of a train. Steve, thank you. It was Android Central. So how rigged is this conversation? The V60 was an improvement over almost everything the V50 had to offer. We had to compromise display resolution, which, you know, I am a little cranky about. And we had to compromise a front-facing camera and a rear telephoto camera. Everything else was a significant step up, or at least a measurable step up. The speakers were better. The headphone jack was better in ways that maybe dogs couldn't hear, but it was still better. It was more powerful. It had a huge battery. It is still one of the best monster battery life performers of last year. And it came in with 5G, $200 cheaper than the launch price of the V50. Not exciting enough. Just LG, they always fail. It's always a fail. They're just never exciting enough. The game is rigged. It's completely rigged. Samsung and Apple are always going to be graded on the most extreme popularity curve, right? They're always going to wreck the curve, Samsung and Apple. Because every time a new Samsung phone comes out, it's like harvest season. Oh, look at this. Look at this, like anxiousness to get your Samsung videos out. Because you got to make your harvest. Got to get those views. You got to get that ad revenue. I got to say nice things to Samsung owners because I need to make more money. But we're already watching, the video rates just plummet on Samsung commentary. S21 ain't it. It's not going to be the same, back in the S9 days where a Samsung video could, subsidize your channel for other content. It would get so much traffic, you would make so much money off of that, that you could spend some time doing some other things. Now it's this desperation to be at the bleeding edge, the very beginning of the conversation, because the conversation is already kind of done. And the phone isn't even really fully out and shipping to consumers. So, I'm sad because I feel like this is an opportunity yet again for LG to reach out directly to their customers, to reach out directly to their consumers. When the boot looping happened on the G4, it took LG longer than it should have to react, but they actually did do a fairly decent good faith effort at trying to replace phones. The issue was a systemic problem with the Qualcomm chipset in that phone. So varying degrees of success for different consumers swapping out their G4s. But they actually did make a solid effort. They didn't make any noise about it. They didn't hold a giant public commission like Samsung did, the dog and pony show of getting down to the bottom of why Note 7s were exploding. So Samsung won the hearts and minds. And just throughout all of these various conversations that we have, there are all these opportunities for LG to step up, the global corporate entity that is LG, and do a better job of telling their own story. If they can't tell their own story, they're not going to inspire much confidence. We live in an age where the tail wags the dog in very interesting ways. Techies respond to the popularity of consumers. Techies try to act like tastemakers, but they're not. They mostly exist to fulfill and confirm the bias of the community that watches their videos. That's the reality of a YouTube-weighted algorithm. Lots of people own Samsung. I say nice things about Samsung. People pat themselves on the back, and they agree with me because they already put their money on Samsung. It's a cycle, and it reinforces itself. But those consumers, because they aren't having their tastes made by the influencers, largely are having their tastes made from advertising. Samsung tells you how to feel about their products. Apple tells you how to feel about their gear. Apple tells you, you should feel good being on Team Apple. Someone buys into Apple, they feel good. That directly contributes to the tech influencer conversation. And you end up just becoming a marketing arm for mega billion-dollar corporations. And it's frustrating. I don't want it to be like that. But if LG can't stand up to tell people how they should feel about their products, then yeah, they're going to keep failing in this market. The issue with LG phones has almost nothing to do with the phones. If you really use an LG, you can appreciate why it's absolutely relevant competition for a Samsung or an iPhone. You might not always appreciate the differences, the pros and cons, which are different on an LG, but you can't walk away from that experience going, no, it's just not good enough for the money. Unless you're a shill. Unless you are totally gamed by the popularity algorithm on YouTube, you can appreciate why different has a place at the table. Maybe it's a smaller slice of the pie, but it deserves to be at the table. I'm mixing my metaphors here because I'm tired. Here's what I think is likely, and I think it's very similar to the Huawei situation. When LG executives put out that memo and they said, these are all the things that we've got on the table, these are all the things we could do, that plan is already being implemented. We've got it on pretty decent rumors on, I would say, very likely rumors that over the next year, we're going to see LG working with ODMs to make some of their lesser expensive phones. It's just going to be an LG label stamped on some other manufacturer's hardware. That's a way to reduce costs. It's a way to cut costs. That makes sense to me. So already a part of that memo is likely going to be implemented this year. Then we look at the medium term. What do we do with an underperforming division while we're still putting out a ton of R&D and we're still spending a lot of cash on scrollable phones and different display technologies and showing up at CES for keynotes? And how do we incorporate this and try and make it make money? Well, if it can't make money, you look for a buyer. And there are definitely going to be companies interested in buying up, LG smartphone business, Vinh in Vietnam, apparently has put out feelers on what it would take to acquire LG smartphone division. And then from there, in the longer term, if someone doesn't buy the division, you shutter it. So we've got the same short term, reduce costs, medium term, find a buyer, in lieu of a buyer, longer term, shut it down. And I would say by 2023, we'll see a very different LG than we do today. I would prefer an LG that is more public about their phones, is more consistent in their messaging, is reaching out to consumers more directly, bypassing techies. Maybe stop sending phones to us and maybe just put more boots on the ground to set up kiosks in malls when we're all vaccinated and to really sell the lifestyle of LG as a lifestyle companion brand. And the phones are a part of that equation, just like the TVs and appliances are. If they can't do that, then I would say by 2023, the LG smartphone division is probably acquired by a smaller third-party entity. Vin looks likely. Again, they've already been doing some manufacturing in Vietnam, so selling to a local player in Vietnam makes the most sense to me. So that's my gig. The death of LG smartphones. I think we've got a year. I think we've got this year where we'll see the roadmap play out in the way that we think it would. A scrollable sometime in the second half of the year, probably really expensive. I would assume somewhere over $2,000 for an LG scrollable. I'm hoping for a V70 replacement, something that's what I think likely is going to look like a V70, but have more of the guts of the V60. I won't love rounded edges, but we still need to have confirmation on memory card, headphone jack, and I'm really hoping LG sticks with some kind of dual display support for a V series replacement. It's just so handy. My V60 never comes out of the dual display case unless I need to put it on a mount. So that's where I feel we'll end up in 2021. I think we're going to get a refresh to the K series, a refresh to the Stylo. They might not be built by LG. They might just be labels. And then from there, a premium phone option, an Explorer experiment, and then we'll be into 2022 talking about some other more radical change for LG's smartphone division. We'll have to see. I feel a lot of this is really just a problem of messaging, though. I really feel the main thing standing in LG's way is a commentary that is not defined by LG. A V60 can show up in an M&M video. It's not going to change the hearts and minds. The company needs to speak for itself, and it can't keep hoping other people will speak up for it. So I feel like that's the gig. We should probably wrap this up. An awesome possum. The death of LG is still speculation. Again, it's just varying degrees of likeliness. I think the likelihood of LG completely bouncing the North American market and bouncing the smartphone market this year, pretty low. Still a possibility. It could still happen. I don't think it likely. And McCorkran, it doesn't look promising for an LG Wing 2. And I don't think it will be. I'll be curious to see if we get a refresh on the Wing. Because what could be kind of fun is if you took the exact same shell, because all of the engineering and why the Wing is so expensive is the hinge. You could keep that the same and do a sort of an internal swap, a component swap, maybe bump it up to a Snapdragon 870, or if there's some replacement for the 765, something like that could work. But again, it's additional costs, additional manufacturing, additional R&D. And if their big play for Explorer is a scrollable, that's also going to be a lot of money outlaid for that one device. So we'll have to see. I put Wing replacement as a sort of a right smack dab in the middle coin flip likelihood. It could happen. It might not happen. I don't think I've seen any evidence to suggest one way or the other how it might go down. So, That's where we're at. Folks, this was a super fun show. How great was it having that hype train and actually paying attention to it? Because I'm sure I've had previous hype trains. I'm not aware of what a hype train is. I need to do better at Twitch. I'm really bad at the Twitch. But I greatly appreciate everyone who was out there supporting, especially Paul, man, MVP of this live chat, just really stepping it up. That is so, so greatly appreciated, especially as we have these conversations on a platform like Twitch. When I complain about policy at YouTube, it is heartening. It is encouraging to me that we can try and find some alternatives. We can try and host these discussions elsewhere. We're not beholden to one company and we don't need to put all of our eggs in one basket. So on that note, I've definitely got to give my voice a break. I've been drinking so much water to try and get through this that I really have to go to the bathroom. Like, this is the worst I've ever ended a podcast, like, with abdominal cramps. Too much information, but, you know, I feel like I need to share this with you. And I feel like we've built this relationship where I can. So, folks, I want you to have a fantastic week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I want to see everyone's faces back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Be safe. Take care. The world is still a ridiculous and crazy place, and I want everyone to keep their heads down and stay well so that we can come back and have another fun, geeky, nerdy chat. Take care. I love you all. Catch back.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.